has a bit of time now being chased. Lance throws. He's looking downfield. He's got a receiver, and it is caught. Jimmy Smith at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown, Jacksonville. Play action, Brunell. Deep drop, pressure coming. Turns and Clancy's looking for Jimmy Smith down the sideline. Smith gets behind the covers, makes the catch. Touchdown, Jacksonville. Play clock running down. Drop back, here comes the blitz. Brunell first, he needs the ball, and he's looking for Jimmy Smith, and it is caught. Jimmy Smith's got it. He's on the run inside the 10, 5, touchdown, Jimmy Smith, his third of the football game, 40 yards, and he's got 287 yards receiving.
Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your host Mike Dempsey and Ryan O'Halloran.
All right, Fat Tony's got the day off because the Bulls Bulldogs seek a state title tonight. He'll be on the broadcast on 1010 XL 92.5 FM. Mike Dempsey and Ryan O'Halloran from the Florida Times Union here with you.
I can guarantee Gene's going to be tweeting throughout the Bulls game.
Will he?
Yes.
Excitedly?
Yeah, well, breathlessly.
Random pictures that have nothing to do with the actual content of the tweet?
I don't know if he, I'm pretty sure he probably would make the trip down there because it's quirky. Maybe write it up, but we'll see.
All right. I'll be breathlessly tuned to Gene Fournette's Twitter feed, I guess, tonight. There's a plug for you, Gino, if you're out there listening. You keep up that tweet storm tonight.
I'll plug Gene one more time. Sunday, usually at the end of the show, he is writing the Jimmy Smith story for our paper on Sunday. So I'm sure that'll be good.
Well, he's been here throughout, so that seems pretty appropriate there. It's going to be a big day. For Jimmy and for a lot of former Jaguars, I've heard the number 60 thrown around, 60 former teammates coming in to watch him go up and be inducted into the Pride.
Yeah, they sent out a list this morning, and they did it like in paragraph form, so you couldn't really easily count it. But, I mean, it was a pretty long list. This seems to grow each year.
Nice. Like to see it, and it'll be a big moment, at least from that standpoint, for the Jaguars and the Jaguar fans have something positive to think about. Now, Tyler Devitt is here with us today, but as we mentioned, he's playing hurt. Tyler, what the heck happened to you last night?
Okay, so if your car is broken down on a major road in the city of Jacksonville, what is one thing you want to do? Obviously, turn
hazards.
On your hazards. Turn your hazards is the first step.
Hopefully get it off to the side of the road.
Exactly, and that's what this guy was trying to do, so hats off to this guy. But the method he was trying to do it to get off the road was the worst method possible. He was going in reverse to get off the road, to reverse back into a gas station. But get this, when he was going in reverse, his reverse lights weren't on, so nobody could tell that he was rolling backwards. I think he was in neutral. And every car in front of me was veering off at the last second to avoid this guy, you know, in traffic. And the car in front of me veered off at the last second to avoid him, and I had no time to react. Hit this guy probably going whatever the speed limit was, of course.
Maybe 1 mile below.
Maybe 1 mile below, because I am a law-abiding citizen.
No question.
And, I smacked the guy without even touching my brakes, and thank God for seatbelts, yeah.
What road were you on?
It was pretty much at Merrill and 295 right there in front of the Walmart and the Gate gas station.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
his drive shaft broke, so he was trying to roll back into the gas station, which doesn't make any sense to me. I mean, sit there on the side of the road.
I guess, you know, you panic. You want your car off the road because you wonder who's going to clip you and let me get this thing out of the thoroughfare. But I always learned that no matter what the cause of it, the person who hit somebody from behind is always at fault.
And that's what I was so worried about. But I think because he was rolling backwards without having reverse lights on into traffic, I think there's a little bit of a different situation here.
Is that your best guess from what dealing with you? Obviously, you guys called the authorities and filed a report and all that stuff on that.
And the officer seemed to be on my side, and I was not citated, so there was no citation given to me, and I was let go.
Making
so
up a word now.
We did make up a word there.
Did I make up a word, citated?
Cited.
You just say cited.
Right? That's cited. Fine. I like his word. We understood it the whole way. I'm going to say
communicator here.
You may have had a little brain trauma last night, and that's understandable this morning. So we're glad you're fine. I mean, you're mostly okay. No broken bones or anything?
No, just some sore ribs. I was questionable coming into today's show, but I'm happy to be here, guys. And I'm going to break down another exciting Jaguars possible victory this weekend.
That's right. Hey, they're playing. The game hasn't started, so it's still a possible victory.
Very possible.
For now. That's right. We'll get into that. In fact, O'Halloran, you're pretty streaky, right? Have you gotten them all right in the newspaper this year?
I'm 12-0, and I'm thinking about...
What did you think the Jags would go at the beginning of the season?
7-9.
Okay, so as you went along, though, you just took each week on a case-by-case basis then and said you didn't try to make it fit your prediction.
Correct,
7-9.
Correct, because, you know, the rhythms of the season.
Right,
and stuff.
Right.
So I've gotten everyone right so far. I'm going to take the good guys on Sunday.
He's on the fence of taking the Jags here, ladies and gentlemen.
Because the Vikings offense stinks.
It's bad. It's bad.
No Harrison Smith, most likely.
Right.
That's a big loss because that Bear game on that Monday night, Minnesota didn't have Smith. I don't think one of those safeties, and the Bears had some success and won the game. So, also, I'm going to go with a little bit of karma. You're going to have some of the previous greats of this franchise
in the
building, and maybe they can change the puck luck. So
their spirit, their presence will create a winning environment.
Yeah. Yeah.
For the current day Jacksonville Jaguars. Like to see it. Definitely like to see it.
Well, we can pretty much guarantee, usually when you say it's going to be like a slugfest, it's usually a shootout.
Right.
But we were right last week.
Yes.
I mean, we thought it was going to be low scoring.
I don't think this is a shootout by any stretch, right? Because while Minnesota's offense struggles greatly, their defense is as opportunistic as pretty much any in the league.
Yeah, and second in turnover ratio, which means they don't give it up and they do take it.
And they do take it. They play a very conservative offense, though, so that's what they do, and they're very content to, you know, they try to score on 10 to 12 play drives. They don't hit you over the top very often, and they're content to play good defense, punt the ball, and, you know, if you got a quarterback who's giving opportunities to the other team, they're the kind of squad that takes advantage of that and takes it back, and they're very good at scoring on defense.
Yeah, and they're very good on special teams in the return game, which is coverage has been an issue.
Cordarrelle Patterson.
And then Sherrills is third in the NFL on punt returns.
There you
go. You know the Jaguars' history doing that the last couple weeks.
You got a bad combination there, but
why am I picking them?
Ryan O is a little optimistic today. Hey, I know you got to. We're going to talk with Tim Yotter from Viking Update Magazine coming up. Get the latest on that squad. Adrian Peterson says he's only going to return if they're still viable for the playoffs when he feels healthy enough to play. So we'll get into that and what the Vikings bring to the table this week. And I know Nathaniel Hackett at the bottom of the hour, right?
Yeah.
So you stick around for a little bit.
Yep.
We'll get into A-Rob and Blake and Nathaniel Hackett sitting down and having their tete-a-tete this week and what that means for where they're going to go over these final 4 weeks. And let me throw out the question of the day, not specifically Jaguar-related. In fact, it's not Jaguar-related at all. I did put a link to the playoff standings in both the tweet and the Facebook post with this, and we asked you today, presented by the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships, which team currently not in the postseason do you think is most likely to earn a playoff spot over the final month of the season? You know, some of the candidates would be like Miami, just on the outside looking in, Pittsburgh, Washington had been in, they got knocked out. You can go through the list. Certainly, just about anybody in the AFC South not named Jacksonville could fit into this category. So check out the standings and reply back and let us know who you think is going to steal one of those playoff spots from one of the teams that, if the season ended today, would currently be in the postseason. 641-1010 is the phone number. It's also the number for the text line driven by Duval Ford. So we'll take your Jaguar questions, comments, and whatnot at that those spots as well. And on Twitter, at MD_1010XL, at Ryan O'Halloran, and on the Jaguars Today Facebook page. We'll talk Vikings with Tim Yotter of Viking Update Magazine coming up next on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
I think he's very accurate. He's got really good poise back there. I think that they've kind of changed their style, like you were talking about. There was a little bit more short and intermediate passing game, and I think he's adjusted well to that. You know, I just think that, he's seen a lot of looks. He's very poised in the pocket. You want to try to get pressure on him, but he becomes frustrating as a defensive lineman because he does make good reads and he has a good release.
That's Jaguars head coach Gus Bradley yesterday talking about Minnesota Viking quarterback Sam Bradford. Mike Dempsey and Ryan O'Halloran of the Florida Times Union here with you on Jaguars Today. Ryan, it's time to talk a little Vikings as we welcome in Tim Yotter, Viking Update Magazine, VikingUpdate.com. Tim's probably sick of me. I have him on all the time on my show on Sirius XM, and he's kind enough to join us this morning to preview this weekend's game. Tim, good morning. How are you?
Morning. Doing well. How are you?
We're doing okay. Tell us, in your estimation, Sam Bradford, how has he played this year? Has it been a successful merger between these two? Obviously, the Vikings were in a tough spot.
Yeah, I mean, I think given the whole situation with their offensive line, which is, you know, they've lost three starting tackles on that offensive line. And so I think considering that and the amount of pressure he's had, he's played very well. He, you know, he's been under fire a little bit from fans around here, a lot of it having to do with a really costly and bad interception he threw at the end of the Detroit game on Thanksgiving. But when you look at his starts in whole, the 11 starts that he's had, he's played very well. He's gotten rid of the ball quickly. They've had to adjust to that a little bit more in the past month to try to make up for all the injuries on the offensive line. But overall, I think he's done a really nice job here.
You mentioned Bradford, Tim. Longest completion is 46 yards. Because of the offensive line issues, are they even attempting to take shots downfield? And if they do try and do that against the Jaguar defense, who's the most likely receiver to run those routes?
Yeah, I mean, you know, against Detroit, they were so quick and so short that I think they realized, you know, you have to try to stretch the field on occasion. And so they did that more with moderate success. You know, it wasn't, they are not going to be an explosive offense by any stretch of the imagination the rest of this year because of the offensive line. When they are going deep, it tends to more often than not be Adam Thielen, an undrafted guy who's kind of made his way up the roster through special teams and now has really started to prove himself as a receiver. You know, for the first time in a long time, they actually took a deep shot to Cordarrelle Patterson, and he got called for offensive pass interference on that one after catching the ball. But generally, the way they've used Patterson is a lot of wide receiver screens, end arounds, and those sort of things to just try to get the ball in his hands as quickly as possible and let him make plays with his size and athletic ability.
How disappointed have they been, Tim, that they really have gotten nothing out of Laquon Treadwell so far this year?
Yeah, it's been a bit of a mystery because of, you know, the way that the receiver core has gone around here in the past 5 years, it's really been a rotation of just trying to find anybody to step up. Last year, it looked like it was going to be Stephon Diggs. This year, he's really cemented that position as their number one receiver. But there has been an opening all year for somebody to really grab that number two spot. It started out as Charles Johnson. He's fallen down the depth chart quite a bit. You know, Cordarrelle Patterson has gotten a lot more involved. Adam Thielen is getting, you know, the most snaps next to Stephon Diggs. And then you've got Treadwell, who up until a few weeks ago really hadn't been given much of an opportunity in games. Now he's starting to get more snaps, getting maybe, you know, a third to a half of the snaps. But he hasn't been targeted much. He only has one catch. And a lot of it has to do with an ankle injury that dates back to his college days. You know, I've talked to him a few times over the last few weeks, and, you know, he says it's no longer a problem, and it doesn't look like it is. It looks like he's gotten some of his explosiveness back in practice, but it just hasn't translated into games at this point.
Running game is broken. 3 yards a carry for the Vikings. Even when Peterson was healthy the first game and a half, they weren't doing much. Is it as bad as the statistics suggest, and why is it so bad?
Yeah, I mean, I would say it is. In general, they've gotten a little bit better over the past couple of weeks. But, you know, one of their major issues has been just getting hit behind the line of scrimmage and really nowhere to go. The offensive line has not done a good job of opening holes. There have been times that there have been creases for the running backs and they've chosen the wrong hole. And so, you know, it's a bit of a combination of things, but if you're going to lay the blame on one specific thing, I would say it's just the offensive line has not been able to move people back off the line of scrimmage, and that's really created very little space for the running backs to go anywhere. You know, without Adrian Peterson, I don't even think it's people defenses stacking up against the run. They really don't have to respect it at this point because the Vikings haven't proven otherwise.
Tim Yotter, Viking Update Magazine, VikingUpdate.com. Tim, Peterson himself made some comments this week that he would like to return, but only if the Vikings have a legitimate shot to make the playoffs by the time he feels like he is healthy enough to be on the football field. Looking ahead to next year, he's got one more year, big money on that contract. He's 31 years old right now. Is there a chance that these two parties part ways before 2017?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a very good chance, and I think it will all come down to whether Peterson is willing to accept, a major slash in his salary. Right now, scheduled to make $18 million next year. Big decision in March with a big bonus due. I think $6 million in March. And I just can't imagine that the Vikings are going to go into the season when they have a lot of other younger players that they would like to sign to extensions and be willing to pay that much for a running back, no matter how good he is. And so it's going to come down to, I would anticipate they're going to ask him to take a cut. And is Peterson going to be willing to accept that? Or is it going to be one of these situations where, you know, a guy is asked to take a cut and then, you know, he maybe could still make more with his current team, even taking that cut, but is upset about being asked about it and is willing to take less to go somewhere else. So I think there's a good chance that this is Peterson's last season. And, if he plays any more this season remains to be seen.
Flipping over the defense, Tim, third in the league, yards allowed. Who's been their best one or two players on defense this year?
It's really been a big team effort. Linval Joseph has been very good as a nose tackle, getting in there, clogging up running lanes, and has improved his pass rush a bit. They've got some good defensive ends. Eric Kendricks, their middle linebacker, is playing very well of late. Anthony Barr is explosive but hasn't really been a playmaker like he was last year. And then really Harrison Smith in the back end. I would say, of their whole defense, which I think is pretty talented across the board, I would say Linval Joseph and Harrison Smith have been their two best guys, but Harrison looks like he's not going to play this week if he plays in the next few weeks because of a high ankle sprain. So, it's a bit of a depleted defense when they lose Harrison because of everything that he's asked to do. I don't think they've got another player that they put in that position where they ask him to be up at the line of scrimmage or back and just moving him all around. So, it may take some of the versatility away from Zimmer's defense.
Xavier Rhodes has gotten some national pub as a guy that's moving into that really, truly elite stratosphere of cornerbacks. Has he played as well as that reputation would suggest this year, Tim? And is he a guy that the Vikings just simply every week say, we're going to determine who we think the biggest threat is, you're going to cover him all over the field? How do they utilize Xavier Rhodes?
It's kind of on a game-by-game basis. When they've gone up against bigger receivers, then they've tended to have him follow that guy around. Last year and in previous years, it was Calvin Johnson. But when it's a smaller, shiftier leading receiver, then they probably are just going to have him stick to his regular side and trust that Trey Waynes or Terrence Newman can handle whoever it might be going over there. So it really kind of depends. But he's a bigger physical cornerback who's got great speed. And I think he's starting to gain more and more confidence every year to be a bit more of a playmaker. There was a long time where he was pretty good in coverage, but wasn't making a lot of plays on the ball. Now he tends to be looking to make plays on the ball, which is really helping this team because they need to find more ways to score and put themselves in position to score rather than just relying on an offense that hasn't been very good.
Tim, I got to make a admission here. I'm a lifelong Viking fan. I grew up in North Dakota, so I follow the purple every week. I didn't think this was a Super Bowl team entering the season. 5-0 got my hopes up. I'm looking at this as a missed opportunity in the NFC North because of the Packers. The Bears stink. The Lions are, 8-4. How's it being viewed in the Twin Cities, and who are they blaming?
I think there was a lot of hope that it could be a potential Super Bowl team. Last year, the way things ended, for people that remember, in the wild card game against the Seahawks, where they have a missed 27-yard field goal, that would have won the game for them. That knocked them out. And then, you start the year, 10 days before the season's going to start, and Teddy Bridgewater goes down with a massive knee injury. And then 2 weeks into the season, Adrian Peterson goes down and hasn't played since. In that same game, Matt Khalil, their left tackle, goes down. Two games later, right tackle Andre Smith goes down. So they've lost all these guys that have been on injured reserve. And that's really the way that most people are looking at it. Like, man, we can't believe how many injuries the Vikings have had, especially at offensive tackle, where it's just been, you know, they've just been depleted one week after another, and just trying to find any sort of combination that, that can work there. And, you know, right now, even if they would make the playoffs, which they're going to have to win their last four games to make the playoffs, if they would do that, you know, it, you still wonder how would they fare against teams that are good pass rushers that, that can get after the quarterback. I just, you know, I don't see a deep playoff run for this team coming because of their offensive struggles.
All right, Tim, we'll wrap up with this. What do you hear about Teddy Bridgewater and his rehab? They have Bradford under contract for another year. Obviously, they invested a first-round pick to get him. Is the thought that Sam Bradford's likely the quarterback? Because from, you know, far away, the reports we've heard is that it was a pretty devastating injury for Bridgewater. Is there a chance he's back on the field for the start of the 2017 season? What is realistic?
I highly doubt it. You know, at minimum, there was ACL and one more ligament tear, probably more than one. They called it multi-ligament. They have been very hesitant to talk about it. Bridgewater has turned down a few opportunities to talk about it over the last couple of weeks. You know, he's off crutches. He is walking around, but that's a big difference from being able to play at a high level. So I don't anticipate he's going to be ready to start the 2017 season, and I do think that, you know, Sam Bradford is their guy for 2017 and potentially moving forward beyond that.
All right, Tim Yotter, the site is VikingUpdate.com. Viking Update Magazine is the outlet, and you can find them on Twitter simply at Viking Update. Tim, always appreciate the time both here and on satellite radio. Thanks for always coming on to talk Vikings with us.
All right, no problem. Thanks, guys.
There he goes, the Minnesota Vikings coming into town, and man, 5-0 to 6-6 right now, and Tim thinks they need to run the table. He might be right. Two games behind Detroit in the division alone, and Detroit swept them with the tiebreak there, so basically a three-game lead if you look at it that way. The Vikings going to have to get very lucky down the stretch. We'll see if the Jags can give them some of that bad luck coming up this week. Ryan O'Halloran has just left the building, at least left the room. He's down the hall talking with Nathaniel Hackett. We'll find out what the Jags offensive coordinator had to say. We'll also listen into some of what Blake Bortles and Gus Bradley and others had to say yesterday as they met with the media for their midweek press conferences. Jaguars today, we're live at Everbank. Mike Dempsey and Ryan O'Halloran. Fat Tony trying to bring home a championship with the Bulls Bulldogs tonight. This is Jaguars Today, live at Everbank on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
This is the quarterback here at Jacksonville Jaguars, Blake Bortles, and you are listening to Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
No, not at all. You know, I think it comes from Gus and Nathaniel, and, you know, I think the support they have in me, and, you know, I think the confidence I have in myself. You know, I think that I believe I can do this. I believe we can do this. I think it's just a matter of time, and I think we're really close. You know, I know people are tired of hearing that, and I'm tired of saying it, but we're not far off.
Well, they haven't been far off, at least as far as the final scores go. By the way, that song featured in the Harry Stamper documentary soundtrack right there. If you didn't catch that, I heard them discussing it this morning. Armageddon, I believe, was the official working title of that. I'm a big fan of that documentary, just like Dan Hicken. That's Blake Bortles on whether or not his confidence has wavered. I'm glad he came around to saying, you know, it comes from me internally, too, because he said at first, well, it comes from Nathaniel Hackett and Gus Bradley. It can't come from outside. You got to have it internally first, and obviously you have to have reasons for that, but I think every successful quarterback, even when they go through bad times, and this is more than just, I think, going through bad times, they have an unwavering kind of confidence that sometimes isn't always backed up by the evidence, right? You just have this crazy belief in yourself. I don't think you can get to that level and be successful in the NFL as a quarterback without having a good deal of that. So hopefully Blake's confidence is not entirely shattered. You know, before we get any further on some of this Blake Bortles audio, which we're about to do, it just amazes me. As we talked with Dan Hicken maybe 40 minutes ago or so, let off the program, and all Dan did was acknowledge it. You know what? Blake at least takes it like a man, right? He stands up, he answers every question, because in addition to playing poorly, you can be a poor ambassador for your organization on top of that, and he's not that, right? And that's not to say that supersedes the play on the field. The play on the field is the most important thing. And as soon as you say anything positive, though, about any aspect of Blake, oh, my gosh, text line goes nuts. Ah, no, 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 no. Oh, you can't. He's terrible. Why are you trying to cover up for him? We're not covering anything. It's just a fact. The guy, I think I'm impressed by how he handles it. Tyler, you weren't really here to cover Blaine Gabbert. Blaine Gabbert had the thinnest skin.
It's unfortunate.
Of anybody you see, unfortunate for you.
Yes.
Yes. That you couldn't have been here for the great era of Blaine Gabbert football. But they're trying to avoid having the same record that they did the last time Blaine Gabbert haunted these halls.
They're not doing a good job of avoiding that, Mike.
They're not right now doing a good job of that, although O'Halloran's putting his 12-0 mark on the line to pick the Jaguars. He's leaning that way. Hasn't made it official yet, but at least leaning that way.
We always talk about how Blake takes the criticism very well, and on the national TV stage on Thursday Night Football last year when they beat the Titans, you might remember he told Deion Sanders this.
What do you need? What do you need? What's the one other component that you need to get you to the next level besides the obvious running game?
I got to quit throwing picks.
So I like that, man.
I'm going to figure that out.
Like that. That's respect right there.
Appreciate
because it's honest.
Yeah.
What gets you there?
You know, I think having a conscience about the ball, which I do, but, I think I still got to eliminate some high-risk, low-reward throws, you know, so I still got to be smart with it and take, you know, kind of calculated chances.
Those high-risk, low-reward throws are still happening, Mike.
Well, look, I can live with those, right? I can live with the so-called 50-50 balls that we all talked about. Is it really a 70-30 ball with Allen Robinson, right, when you throw
but
it
those
up?
Those three-yard out routes that are getting picked off, the pick sixes, which that out route's been picked off to the house, what, three or four times already?
Yeah, it's that those are the ones. There's no high reward on the other side of those, right? It's all risk. It's almost not, there's almost not even a degree of risk. It's a degree of certainty.
Right.
I guess the question is, did the defensive back drop the football at that point? That's kind of what you're hoping for. So yeah, I'm with you on that. If it were all in that category of high risk, high reward, it is good to acknowledge the issue. If you don't acknowledge you've got the issue, it's difficult to work on it. But whatever work's been put in clearly hasn't had much of an impact because it continues at a heavy pace right now with the ball going back the other way. And I'm telling you, this team has a knack, Tyler. You know it. The Minnesota Vikings, they get their hands on the football and they're really good with it going back the other way because in part they know that they have to do that to compete because the offense has been so anemic for that football team. That's a difference between this Jags team and the Minnesota team. The Jags have a very solid defense, but they don't create those turnovers.
They can't bring it in.
And thus they're not creating – right. They're not giving them the short fields. They're not taking them back to the house.
Yeah, there's a reason the Vikings defense is the number one defense in fantasy football right now. I mean, they're going to get you about 10 points a week, whether it be just on pure points allowed alone or sacks and turnovers and fumbles. They create turnovers, and they're looking to score when they get those turnovers.
Yeah, Everson Griffin is a really good pass rusher. He's not in that Khalil Mack, Justin Houston kind of category. He's not that guy, but he is a very solid end. And Jeremy Parnell is going to see a lot of him this week. And, Parnell was solid, I thought, against the Denver Broncos. It's something that we didn't talk a lot about this week, and we probably should have. I thought the offensive line and pass protection, you consider Denver and, you know, all the pass rush pressure they can bring to bear. I thought they did a pretty good job. I don't want to say an excellent job. Certainly, you know, Blake had the sack fumble that ended up costing, really cutting off any chance for victory.
And that was because Parnell got pushed back into him partially, right?
Right, but that's still part of it.
Parnell, obviously.
No, but that's pressure and getting driven back regardless. But I mean, for the most part, the game to me wasn't a jailbreak. You know what I mean? I didn't feel like Blake was scrambling for his life on every down. And against Denver, you could have seen a worst case scenario going in that direction. So I thought they did okay. You know, I've heard some of the narrative this week, heard people on the station talking about how well they ran the ball. I didn't think they ran the ball well at all. I think it's skewed by Bortles' numbers. When you look at what Yeldon and Denard Robinson did on a per-carry basis, it wasn't that good. You know, I mean, a lot of running for a very little return out of those guys. You can talk about Yeldon being less than 100%. It doesn't matter. The end result was they weren't breaking off any runs. They weren't averaging a decent yard per carry. I thought it was very workmanlike at best. I didn't think it was a good running game at all just because the total was there. There were some tricked up plays. When I look at the run game, I look at what your tailbacks are doing. You know, you could run a wide receiver reverse and it could go for 70 yards and that adds to your rushing statistics, does that make you feel like you had a good running game that day? Not to me, it doesn't. So I was surprised how many people thought that they ran the ball really well last week, because I didn't feel that way. Here's more on Blake on the confidence factor, and how does he maintain that in the midst of not winning many football games?
I think he's got to keep throwing it. You know, I've thrown 11 pick sixes. That's part of the game. That's obviously the extreme side of it. But, you know, those things are going to happen. I understand that. I have severe or a really big conscious, I guess, of taking care of the ball when you go into a game. You know, it's really a big focus of mine in trying to do that. You know, balls are going to get tipped and things are going to happen.
All right, so that's, you know, some of what, you know, he's dealing with right now as Ryan O'Halloran rejoins us. Let's play a quick cut here, Tyler. Let's go with cut number 9 from Blake, and I want to get Ryan's opinion on this and see if Nathaniel Hackett had anything to say. I'm sure he did. On the meeting that he had with A-Rob and Hackett this week.
He's an unbelievable guy. Spent a lot of time. We're always talking, but I think that was kind of a thing where it was, let's sit down together, let's sit down, you know, with Nathaniel and talk through some of this stuff and figure some of it out rather than, you know, keep going 3 for 10 or whatever and just letting it go. You know, let's try and figure it out.
I have a lot of thoughts on this one, but we can get to a couple either now or later. But I asked Nate Hackett about this just a minute ago. And what I asked him, I said, was this a product of them being frustrated at each other or frustrated with the production? He says 100% was they're disappointed with the losing. There wasn't anything internal of them sparring, but they just said, hey, you know, why isn't the production happening? So A-Rob and Bortles met first just to watch some stuff, and then they both met with Hackett on Monday.
And did any, you know, revelations come to pass? Well, did they figure out anything? Whether or not they're going to tell us specifically, because, you know, that might impact their game plans.
Yeah, one specific, and I mentioned this in the story today, is I asked Chad Henne, I said, hey, how often did you do this when you were starting? He says, all the time. And he goes, one thing they're trying to figure out is on some of these routes that A-Rob is running, where does he want the ball? Is he want to cut off the route? Does he want it high and wide? Does he want it a little lower? So I think that's where I thought that was good insight from Chad, is, okay, now I get it. And then from Blake's perspective, A-Rob is asking, okay, how am I running this route? You know, what can be better to get a better connection?
Am I crazy to wonder why it takes you this many games into a season to have this kind of meeting? It just seems like something that would be a weekly discussion.
Yeah, and I'll probably meet you in the middle. One, that was a natural reaction on Twitter yesterday. Why did it take this long? But also, I think these conversations happen every week. It just so happened that the quarterback offered it yesterday. Maybe this was a little bit more involved in terms of their conversations instead of walking out to practice together or talking on the field. Because one thing Gus said yesterday is during practice, these guys are always talking. So the lines of communication were always open. It just maybe went a step further this week.
And became a little more public as well, as if to say, hey, look, we are trying to exhaust every possibility. Yeah. Don't think we're just showing up every week, getting the same result, not trying something
exactly
new.
It's like that, you know, a desperate time, desperate measure type thing. But it wasn't like they had never spoken about this. And it was surprising because the when Blake revealed this yesterday, it was off my question of, hey, 10 targets, 3 catches. Did the tape show it was a combination of things? Because you watch the coach's tape, a couple bad throws, couple drops, couple times A-Rob just wasn't open, and it's almost like Blake was throwing it away, throwing it only to where Robinson could get a shot at it.
Right.
So combination of factors, and he said, hey, you know, we actually met about that. Well, that's a great story.
And that's how it developed from there.
And I don't think it's a negative story, because I take the, you know, hey, I'm a positive guy.
You are. Yeah. You're Mr. Positive. That's what we always say. You stunned me for a second.
I give them praise for, you know, hey, at least they're not giving up on it. Because, you know, these guys are going to be together most likely next year. So they have to figure it out.
All right. By the way, Tyler just did the quick math. We were talking about the running game last week. T.J. Yeldon, Denard, and Corey Grant as tailbacks, 32 carries for 110 yards. That's 3.45 yards per carry. That to me is not a good run game. I mean, the final tally was there because Bortles, Lee, and Shane Wynn had 6 for 44 mm-hmm. between the three of them.
Yeah, and that's one thing I just asked Nate Hackett is you ran 84 offensive plays last week, none in the red zone. Did it just seem like everything was a struggle? And he said yes. They had 18 third downs. They had half of those third downs. They needed seven or more. They still converted some of those. So it was, yeah, the running game looked good because they just had a lot of attempts.
Right.
Their longest rush was 9 yards. I think that might have been by Blake. Excuse me, 22 Blake, yards.
Yeah, Blake had the long touchdown run, right.
Longest run by a tailback was 9 yards by Yeldon. But what you saw in first and 10 was a lot of 3, 4. Two. So I think that's what they're missing right now is usually when you run 38 times, you pop one or two of those big ones.
Right.
They didn't do that last week.
All right. He's Ryan O'Halloran. I'm Mike Dempsey along with Tyler Devitt. We are live at EverBank. It's Jaguars Today coming back to Dayton football, the Honda drive around the NFL. More from Nate Hackett's press conference, some more audio from yesterday as well with Gus Bradley, Todd Wash, and others. It's Jaguars Today live at EverBank on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
And now, this date in football history.
All right, let's get at it. This date in football history, presented by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. On this date, famous score in NFL history. You've heard this one before, Ryan.
73-0.
73-0, right? 1940, the Bears established an NFL record. They blew out Washington in the championship game. 10 different Bears scored touchdowns in that game. They played before a crowd of a little over 36,000. How much did each player in the game receive as compensation for the championship game? 1940.
$500.
$873. Yeah, you're kind of in the ballpark. You know, you're going to go with $750. Yeah. You didn't want to go over, but $873, which is probably decent money back in 1940. I'll go online and get one of those rate exchangers. All right, you got a bunch of birthdays. I know you love guessing, so I'll give them to you out of order so you can't figure out the sequence. We go with Philip Rivers, first off, a five-time Pro Bowler, the 2013 Associated Press Comeback Player of the Year. What year or how old is Philip Rivers?
36.
35. Born in 1981. Got a couple of former number one overall picks that were born on this date. Jeff George, NFL quarterback for five different teams, is born on this date. He was the first overall pick in the year he came out by the Indianapolis Colts. How old is Jeff George?
47.
49 years old. Can you name the five teams that Jeff George played for in his NFL career?
Colts.
That was the team he was selected by in 1990.
Falcons.
Falcons were second.
Vikings.
The Vikings were fourth for a year.
Raiders.
The Raiders were third, and he finished up with?
Seahawks.
The Washington Redskins.
That's right.
Four out of five for O'Halloran.
I got to tell you a great Jeff George story. It preceded me. He was quarterback in the Redskins in 01 with Marty, and they sent in the play, and it was before the radio, so the player brought the play in, and George says in the huddle, "We're not running that. Here's the play."
probably one of many times that, and maybe why 2001 was his final year in the National Football League. Another first round pick, another first overall pick, a Heisman winner out of South Carolina. George Rogers ran for over 1,600 yards in his rookie season. How old is George Rogers?
55.
58. Born in 58, he is 58 years old, two-time Pro Bowler. He was a first-team All-Pro as a rookie for the New Orleans Saints, the winner of the 1980 Heisman Trophy. Let's see. Former Jaguar for a cup of coffee, Ed White High School via the University of Florida to the Jacksonville Jaguars as seventh-round pick. D. Webb was born on this date. How old is D. Webb?
34.
32 years old for D. Webb, born on this date in 1984. So you went 0 for 4 on the birthdays, but you're kind of in the ballpark on most of them. That is this date in football history, presented by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. They're located conveniently on Gate Parkway. If you need cosmetic work done, if you're in the market for a family dentist, for any dental need, call 620-9225. In the meantime, visit jamesjmccall.com to get a complete list of their comprehensive care services. That was this date in football history.
Now the Honda drive around the NFL, brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
Thankfully for the Jacksonville Jaguars, they will not have to face Vikings running back Adrian Peterson this weekend, but he has been running on the side during practice this week. He said yesterday he feels good and can finally make cuts, and he has been on injured reserve since tearing his meniscus in week two. The Vikings have not used their designated to return option yet, so the door is slightly open if you can return in weeks 16 or 17, possibly. When asked if he plans to return this year, he said that's something I envision, and he told the team's official website that he would not return if the Vikings are eliminated from the playoff race. Odell Beckham, everyone's favorite and most humble player in the league, has been frustrated by officials all season long, and yesterday he said, quote, "There's really not any point in talking about it. There's nothing going to change." Of course, when you say that qualifier that you're not going to talk about it, you continue to talk about it. He said to NJ.com, "You'd really be sitting there wasting your breath." He also said Terry McCauley's crew should never be working a Giants game ever again. Also saying, quote, "It doesn't surprise me. Like I said, everybody knows what's going on the field. Everybody can see it. Even Stevie Wonder can see it." Which,
rim shot.
Boom.
Have you heard the conspiracy theory that Stevie
Wonder... Oh, yeah, Stevie Wonder can see,
yeah,
right?
He's not blind.
Have you seen some of the video that backs up this conspiracy theory? It really is right. Have you seen any of this? Like, Stevie Wonder will walk to the edge of a stage and then stop, like, before he takes a step off the precipice and things like... I mean, there's things like...
The falling
how did
mic
he,
stands on stage and he catches the falling mic
right,
stand.
Right, he catches a falling mic stand. It's like, wait a minute, Stevie. What's going on with you? I don't know. I mean, it's probably just that. It's probably a conspiracy theory. He's probably honed his senses like Matt Murdock, a.k.a. Daredevil. But I don't know what to tell you, Tyler. I kind of am intrigued by that one as well.
It's a definite interesting conspiracy theory. Moving on, Coach Gary Kubiak of the Denver Broncos told reporters yesterday that expects the team's newly signed running back, Justin Forsett, who, by the way, is with his third team of the season. He expects Forsett to already split snaps with rookie Devontae Booker this weekend against the Titans. The Broncos grabbed him off waivers on Monday, a move that Kubiak called a blessing after Capri Bibbs was on IR after a high ankle sprain. And one final story, the Atlanta Falcons kept one of their starting quarterbacks from hitting the open market. They gave a $38 million deal, a $21 million guaranteed part of that to Robert Alford on a four-year contract extension, according to ESPN's Adam Schefter.
He's played pretty well for him, so good for him. Ryan, we're talking about, I was talking about with Pete Prisco earlier this morning about some guys we don't expect to be on the roster. And, I think a lot of people point to Julius Thomas, big money, not a lot of production. Jared Odrick, similar, I think. And Devon House, I got to assume, $6 million per for each of the next couple of years. I could see them taking that money and trying to transfer a contract to kind of the Prince of Mukamara and retain him somewhere in that range because he's making about $5.5 million this year. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, he's probably on the chopping block. Unless it's a new staff who says, we like interceptions, then House would play.
Because he has...
He's going to get beat.
But he's also going to make
some
plays.
He's going to get some plays.
Right.
And that's why he should be playing more.
Is he worth, for
he's not worth his money anymore because he's a number four corner.
Right.
But, it all depends on whose optics are being used, whose eyes are being used. I mean, if he would be a classic guy that if you say to him, okay, you're going to be back but not at that price, he'll probably say, okay, because he's not even going to get close to that. Maybe he won't.
Right. So maybe, hey, you want to make half for 40% of what you're making now, a couple million bucks, whatever the case may be. Do you think Amukamara should be a priority for this team in the offseason?
I think it should with a – but at their price.
Within reason.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think anybody's going to give him $8 million a year but because he hasn't had an interception this year. And, he's missed a couple of games. But if they can find, maybe the same kind of contract they gave House – that's not number one corner money, but it's like number two.
Right, and that's what I'm thinking. I mean, Amukamara played on a one-year deal, all things included, about $5.5 million this year. House is on the books for $6 million with no dead money if they let him go for the next couple of years going forward. I want to hear this before we get back to some other sound. I want to hear one more from Blake Bortles yesterday. And talking about the state of his shoulder, this is number 12, Tyler, on the rundown. This is this Blake right now talking about the shoulder injury that he's clearly dealing with and how much it's impacting him.
Kind of that time of year, I guess, later in the season where guys are banged up. I don't think anybody's 100% healthy. It'd be perfect to stand up here and say that, but I don't think a lot of guys are. So I'm a lot more fortunate than a lot of guys on the team, and it's kind of part of it. It's not anything that I don't think will keep me from playing. It's just an injury, I guess.
clearly, Ryan, when he dove for the first down, aggravated, it was bothering him greatly. Wouldn't have been surprised just looking at him, the body language, if he had come out of the game at that point. I'm not excusing it, any of his play, because he's been throwing interceptions,
sure,
healthy or not. But how much do we know how much this impacts him at all? It is his throwing shoulder.
Yeah, and when he got up like that, the way it was hanging, it was like it was a nerve.
Right.
Like a funny bone type thing where it went limp for a little bit. You know, the Jaguars, if they want, they have a custom-built excuse to sit him down. And you'd put him on the injury report, and you'd say he did not practice, and you could say here's the tape, he's been banged up.
Right.
But they feel that he's playing, he's healthy enough to play.
Well, I mean, he's going out there. He's fought through it. I mentioned this when you were out of the room a minute ago. Some people react so negatively when you say anything positive about Blake, but we have to give the full picture. He is a tough guy. There's no question about it. I'd rather have a guy maybe who wasn't so tough who played better, right? And maybe you couldn't rely on him down in, down out quite as much. But the downs he's on there, he's a lot more efficient. But I mean, it doesn't excuse, again, the poor throws, the interceptions, the lack of pocket awareness at times, whatever the case. But he is a tough guy, and I think that resonates with his teammates.
Yeah, I mean, if you're on the field, there are no excuses. So, you know, he makes a couple throws. I mean, you know, last year he would mix good throws and bad throws, but those good throws would be touchdowns.
Right.
Now it's a third down conversion or the pass he threw to Lee where he threw it over the coverage, which was perfectly placed.
Right, great throw. And then a couple plays later, he misses a similar opportunity where Lee may score if he gets it to him.
So it's the highs aren't as high, and the lows are even lower this year.
Unfortunately so. All right, we'll come back. We'll hear a little bit from Gus Bradley, Todd Wash, as well as they met with the media yesterday. The social media question of the day put out there by the Tom Bush family of dealerships, not a super popular one. It's not a Jaguar-specific one, but if you want to weigh in, you're certainly welcome to. Which team currently not in the postseason picture as of today do you think is the most likely to earn their way in over the final month of the season? We'll take a look at some of those a little bit later on in the hour as well. Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Howard, and Tyler Devitt here with you live at EverBank. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
He puzzled and puzzled till his puzzle of a saw. Then the Grinch thought of something he hadn't before. Maybe Christmas, he thought, doesn't come from a store. Maybe Christmas, perhaps, means a little bit more.
Merry Christmas from 1010XL. From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at EverBank Field, more Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's your boy right there. I take it. I always go based on your reaction. You know, Ty, let's do this now because I keep forgetting. We had somebody on the text line who said they've got a pair of tickets. He said, I'd like to donate my tickets to this Sunday's game to a true active duty military person of Jacksonville. These are pretty good seats here now. Section 203, row FF, seats 3 and 4. Right? So that's nice, right? Mm-hmm. But they want it to be an actual active duty military person who can bring a friend along with them, maybe a couple of active duty servicemen or women. And he says, can you make that happen, Mike? I can't sell them, so I would rather give them to someone who would enjoy the game and the seats. The person's name is Stanford, and he's given us permission to give out his phone number. We're not going to give that out on the air, but if that fits, we want you. You're going to have to show a military ID. I'm not kidding about this, so we don't want you to try to skate in. This is someone trying to do something nice for a military man or woman out there. Call Tyler at 641-1010. And if you are active duty and you don't have tickets and you can't attend the game this weekend, Stanford has agreed to let us pass along his phone number to you. You can get in touch, and it'll kind of be out of our hands, and you guys can work out a time to get together. He said he'd be happy to meet up with you and give you those tickets. So if you're active duty military right now, you can call 641-1010, and Tyler will pass along that phone number. And obviously, only one person can score the ticket. So first one in gets the number, and we'll take it from there and see how it goes. So thank you to Stanford for doing that. That's nice.
203.
Better they get used.
Club level, corner of the end zone on the Jaguar side. So right below the press box.
There you go. Yeah. Hey, oh, Ryan O'Hara can look down on you like he does anyway, metaphorically,
and
all
also,
the time.
And also, just confirmed, we'll have Jimmy Smith tomorrow at 11 o'clock with us.
Hey,
boom,
they
roasted.
Found him. He's been found.
He has been
He's
found.
He's been tough to get a hold of.
Well, you know what? Tyler Devitt is an intrepid producer. He doesn't take no for an answer. We hear he may have gotten a PR person. Maybe just for this week.
That's always a mistake.
Well, it could have been.
Jimmy's got a lot going on this weekend, so he's got to stay organized.
I would imagine so. He's not coming into town until Saturday, I believe is the case.
First mistake.
Why
he
so?
He should have He should have come in Tuesday. He should have made the rounds. He should have attended practice. Embed yourself.
Right. That would have been a good way to do
it. Hey, this is my week.
Right.
And not just my day.
Well, regardless, we're happy to have him on tomorrow, and he'll be on with David Garrard. I believe David will be in with us tomorrow. I haven't confirmed that with him, but I think that's the case.
David is, I counted up one of 64 alumni listed in the email the team sent out as those attending the game Sunday.
Pretty impressive list. Any of the key names worth mentioning?
Everybody who has their name on the stadium,
yes,
save for the Weavers. I didn't see them on there.
I can't imagine they wouldn't be here. At least I would hope they would be here.
I mean, all of the key players that you would think of.
Sure, from Jimmy's era.
Yeah, and I'd forgotten about MJD, his duties on Sunday.
Yeah, because you said Hakamoris is not going to be here. Well, he does a color on the Rams broadcast now, so he's got an excuse, a working excuse.
Yeah, but so I'm sure they announce all that, they trot them all out at halftime. And
by the way, thanks to Gary Kubiak for announcing that Justin Forsett was going to play a larger role in the Broncos' backfield right before Maurice and I had Devontae Booker on last night on the show.
I wonder his phone was scratchy.
So, yeah, it was. Did you listen to it? It was scratchy as hell, man. It was one of those. It was not the best. Put it this way. It was twice as good as Rob Kelly's was last week, though.
Ugh.
That was brutal. So you get the luck of the draw sometimes, and you just go with what you got. So it wasn't, let's just say this way, it wasn't one that would make the Broadcasting Hall of Fame last night.
Yeah. One quick note I wanted to mention. We talked about the offense not having any big plays
yes.
last week, despite running so many plays. 20 of their 32 first down snaps gained less than 3 yards. So that means a lot of second and longs, and they ran.
How many, give me the number again. 20 out of how many?
20 out of 32 first down plays.
Okay.
They gained 3 or fewer yards.
So you're in second and long constantly.
And then they ran 21 times on first and 10. They gained only 58 yards, so a 2.8 average. So you're also in second and long. You know, they were able to chunk some drives together with 7 and 8 yard conversions. But, you run 83 snaps, none were in the red zone. So it was
crazy.
Yeah, first time in the Bradley era they haven't had a red zone snap.
Not a red zone snap, with 83 snaps, Ryan.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like Denver just dominated possession of the football.
And they had good field position a couple of times.
Wow.
So
that is but you know what? I'll give the credit to the defense. They continually got them the ball back to the point where, late in that game, I know a lot of people's we're probably thinking, really, you're going to punt it here? Well, I think their best option was pin them deep. Maybe you get a turnover. Maybe you get a good punt return of your own because you felt like you could get a three and out at that point in time. And it was more likely in that scenario that you'd get good field position than you would going forward on fourth down.
Yeah, I mean, when they had the third and 10, and as soon as Yeldon ran it, I'm thinking, Gus has given Nate Hackett two plays here. He says, you got this four down territory.
Right.
Make it fourth and 5. Okay, that's a lot better than fourth and 10. But then they punt it at 2 and 9. You're at the 45 of your own 45, I think it was. Your defense was playing well enough. You probably would have forced a quicker three and out that way. You would have gotten the ball back. And I think they got it back at like their 23.
Something like that.
So, yeah. I mean, at that point, with your record, I think you go for it just to try and get a little, because you're not going to create
but
a turnover.
But there was another one after that, wasn't there?
Yeah, two more possessions after
right,
that.
Right, two more. And those are the ones more I'm talking about, because you're right. When you've got that fourth and shorter and you're around midfield, it's an area you can be more aggressive in. But some of the other ones, backed up in their own territory. Yeah. I wouldn't have hesitated to send the
team out. Yeah, they went for it on fourth down in Denver territory on the non-call on A-Rob. They're at the 38.
Mm-hmm.
And really, and I told Gus this on Monday, that's no man's land. It's a 57, 58-yard field goal. You had fourth and, you know, a little bit, and it should have been a conversion. Should have been a penalty on Tlaib.
And you still would have needed a touchdown anyway, even if you you get the field goal there. All right, let's hit on a few of these cuts from Gus Bradley. Yesterday we heard him talking about Sam Bradford earlier. We asked Tim Yotter of Viking Update about Xavier Rhodes, and from the sound of it, he's much more likely to match up with Allen Robinson. They don't let him chase those little quicker guys.
Yeah, so I mean, I was just impressed just how excited Tim was for this matchup.
Yeah, he was.
I digress. Let's go.
A little flat. Thanks for reminding us. There's Gus on what he's seen on film from Xavier Rhodes.
He's ideal in size and length. And I think there's, he does a good job in his press technique. Now, they play a variety of different coverages, and I think he does a good job adjusting that. But what's really impressive with him that I saw on tape was his physicalness. I mean, ability to get off blocks and make a tackle. Rarely do you see a corner that is a willing tackler. And I think for him, he's a very willing tackler. And I think that's what can separate corners at times.
What's impressive about Rhodes is what he does after the interception. He has a 100-yard touchdown, and he also has his other three other receptions have combined for maybe like 50 or 60 yards of return. So when he intercepts it, he does make something happen.
He's dangerous. Former first-round pick who took a couple of years to kind mm-hmm. of feel like he was worthy of that selection.
Yeah, and I asked Mike Zimmer about him yesterday, and what Zimmer said is about halfway through last year, you could sort of see him turn the corner in terms of playing the kind of style and technique that the Vikings want him to play. And he said he really picked that up in camp where he left off, and that's why he's producing.
We've talked about the distinct possibility in our minds that Julius Thomas and Jared Odrick would not be back next year. Gus was asked yesterday about the possibility right now of shutting down Julius Thomas still dealing with that back injury.
We keep going back to Wednesdays and see how he, how does it feel now after a couple days away and getting more treatment. And it's really based on him and the doctors when they come. We had conversation again today. I know it's frustrating for him, but it's just not responding as fast as we would like. But I know he feels the same way. So, I mean, we just take it. It really is day to day with him.
Well, it's probably more week to week because he hasn't practiced. You say, why don't they put him on IR? Well, they haven't had to yet. They had to make a move on Rashad Green because his injury may have been a little more serious, and they're running out of bodies at his position. With Thomas, they have three healthy tight ends on the roster right now. But, it's at this point, you'd be surprised if he comes back.
Yeah, if I'm Thomas, though, don't I want to do everything I can to get a little positive tape to head into this offseason?
It's like one of two extremes. Do you want to come back or do you want to stay out?
Right.
Say, hey.
Healthy as possible.
Yeah, I don't want to come back and play the last two games at less than optimum health because then I just may look bad.
Right. Gus was asked about Jared Odrick. Same question. Are we getting close to the point where you're considering shutting him down for the final month?
Same thing with him. With Odrick. We're seeing some progress in him, just like JT. But we all want it faster. And I think when you see, I have a better idea on Fridays after two good days of work like we have on Wednesday and Thursday, we'll have a better idea with both those guys.
The Odrick thing just reeks of a labrum. They haven't been specific with that, but it's like, can you get it better enough to get you through the season and then get it fixed? Because they haven't said it's like a separated shoulder. So, he's had a lot of issues this year. It's really been a lost year for Odrick.
Oh, we don't know. What the coaching staff will look like. We don't know who's going to be making these decisions, what kind of defensive philosophy they want. But when you start to look ahead and, now that they're eliminated from playoff contention, I think it's fair game to do that. Miles Garrett seems to be the best pass rusher out there. I don't think there's a team he wouldn't fit on in the National Football League. I think I don't think it's very likely that he'll be available for the Jags to consider. One name that gets brought up in a lot of mock drafts in this early stage is Jonathan Allen out of Alabama. Very disruptive defensive tackle, but I think he's stout enough that he could play that nose position next to Malik Jackson. How you look at this defensive line, we talk about the depth that they had coming into this season, right? But they don't have that true, I mean, you could envision maybe Ngakoue and Fowler being your two starting ends, but they don't have, to me, that true left end Maybe if Fowler plays there, although he's a smaller guy, usually that's a bigger guy. You know, I don't know if they've got the mold to play a traditional 4-3, so you might need an end there. Roy Miller is getting a little bit older now and, you know, a little injury prone. I don't think they've got a frontline caliber guy. I don't think Avery Jones is the guy they want to roll out there for 16 games as a starter. So how much attention needs to be paid? We think the defense is pretty good and more attention needs to be paid to the offense, but are there some spots on the defensive line you think they need to address early?
There are, and I would expect them to do that. You look at, let's say they stay in a 4-3, you know, at your weak side end in Ngakoue, Fowler, you need another pass rusher. At the nose tackle spot in a 4-3, Miller's coming off an Achilles. That's a big man coming off a big injury.
Right.
How will he play? They're okay at the 3 technique because I think Jackson and Marks are a good combo there. And at the strong side end spot, I'm not counting out Jared Odrick as a cut. Because he was playing okay when he got hurt.
So you're not putting that in the for sure that's going to happen category.
No.
Gotcha.
So because you can't cut everybody.
Right.
And you have the cap space to serve, maybe carry him for another year. And if you say Odrick and Alualu and, a guy like Jonathan Allen, who plays a lot of end for Alabama, who do run a lot of 4-3 now, and that's where he played in the games I've watched. So, you can't have enough of them is the cliche, but you got to have a pass rusher. That's the number one priority. And, you're picking high again.
Number one team priority.
I think so.
You agree, right?
Because they feel they're on the upswing in terms of building a defense, but you got to have a guy who's going to join that pass rusher group. And then once you get that, starting in that second round, I start addressing that O-line.
What about, some people are going to, a lot of people I think are going to bring up the names of Leonard Fournette and Dalvin Cook, an explosive, game-changing, every down running back.
Well, if they're able to accomplish a pass rusher in free agency, then that changes your needs. Dallas is sort of maybe, this is a copycat league, and some people are looking at Dallas saying, okay, if they're as good as Ezekiel Elliott, then you should take him top five.
Right. And how much is Ezekiel Elliott aided, though, by what would TJ Yeldon look like behind Dallas's offensive line?
Yeah, it's the chicken and the egg type thing. That's why, like you say, Ivory and Yeldon would probably be better with behind a more cohesive offensive line. So it's a lot of decisions to be made. And also the Jaguars, like the last couple of years, the draft projections change after the opening week of free agency.
All right, we'll take a time out here. We'll come back, take a look at the fan feedback spotlight of the day. By the way, Cole was the winner or claimed the tickets for active duty military, so congratulations to Cole, and thanks again to Stanford for putting his tickets up to a member of the active duty military, and hopefully those two can get together, and Cole can utilize those tickets and watch Jimmy Smith get inducted into the Pride, and hopefully the Jags maybe win a football game. That would be nice. Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Halloran, wrapping things up in about 20 minutes, live at Everbank. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, more Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, a couple of things here.
We were told to wake up.
Yes, wake up. We haven't run the ball effectively in 4 years. It's not the backs, it's the O-line. Wake up!
We said that.
We just got done saying that. My goodness.
But thanks for listening.
But that doesn't mean you can't simultaneously upgrade both, right? You can do O-line and the backs. I think, put it this way, I think Ezekiel Elliott would have more success than Chris Ivory or TJ Yeldon had, because I think he's more talented here in Jacksonville. But they would have much more success than they've had if they were playing behind Dallas's offensive line as well.
Yeah, I mean,
I think the O-line's more critical.
Yeah, if I'm the Jags, what I do this offseason is not a high pick, but there's going to be backs out there in free agency that aren't going to cost a lot of money, and just maybe sign one or two and have a competition and see who's a hot hand, see if anybody can get hot. At this point, I thought Alfred Morris would have been a much better and cheaper alternative than Chris Ivory. I've proven that to be right.
I don't know.
I think the Morris contract would have given you some options moving forward to maybe sign a back then.
See, that's the thing. I don't think any contract precludes them from doing anything. They're nowhere near. They're not in cap trouble. You know what I mean?
Well, in their mind, they don't want to spend X amount of dollars
on a certain position
after they already have.
Granted, but you know that's if you can upgrade the position, go do it. Why do you guys? This is on the text line driven by Duval Ford. Why do you guys talk about the draft in only in terms of need? You can't target positions in a certain round, as Caldwell has already shown this to be a faulty plan. Just pick the best players in every round, and the needs will be met. Not necessarily. Look again. If you're the Jags are not in this position, but if you are Indianapolis, if the best player is a quarterback in round one, you're not taking a quarterback in round one.
Or if Dallas is on the board at 31 or 32 this year,
and the best player is a running back,
they're not taking them.
They're not taking
them. Or a quarterback.
Or a quarterback.
Or a center.
Right. Yes. So there are certain you do have to. It's a blend of the best players available at a position of need. Rarely do teams, there are certain positions where you can stockpile guys. Like defensive end, because you truly do play more than just the starters. On the offensive line, like you said, you play one center. And if you've got a Pro Bowl center, you're not going to be targeting a center or drafting a center, no matter if he's the best player or not, unless you think you're going to use him at guard.
Yeah. One quick note, I got this on Twitter. We're talking about House, Audric, and Thomas in terms of getting cut. All three of them cut would create about $18 million in space. No dead money for House or Audric, about 2.7 or 3.7 for Thomas. So they would have a lot of cap space. If they make those moves, it would give them even more flexibility.
Is I'll give you a multiple choice. The Jaguars' most prolific tight end in the passing game next year will be A, Julius Thomas, B, Neil Sterling, C, Ben Koyak, or D, someone who's not currently on the roster.
I'll go D.
So you think they'll go out and
maybe
try to acquire
one or draft one that plays a lot, that can block a little better. We sort of seen Koyak tail off a little bit. He's maybe a worker B. Sterling's the guy you put on third down. But in terms of they may go by a committee. But if we say who has the most receiving yards next year out of those guys, I'd probably go Sterling if he can stay healthy.
Out of the guys who are currently here. Right. Yeah. But you still think the most likely, as of right this moment, somebody who's not currently on the roster.
I think so.
All right. You look at your Super Bowl predictions. We're three quarters of the way through the season. You had New England and Green Bay. Still have a chance to get
life
that.
Support.
Green Bay needs to maybe win out to get into the postseason. If you could pick now who your Super Bowl matchup would be, what's your best bet?
I'd still go New England, even without Gronkowski, and then I would go Dallas.
Go Dallas, okay. Yeah. I pick Kansas City and Seattle. I don't feel like I'm that far off that I'd need to really change. The betting favorite may be the Cowboys, simply because it looks like they'll have home field in the NFC, and they can control the game offensively the way they want to.
Well, tonight's a big one for you, because right now Seattle would be in line for a first-round bye?
I believe so, yes. Okay. Kansas City would be in line for a first-round bye if they win tonight.
Yeah, so that helps, because not only do you have to win three on the road, you only got to win two at home.
Right.
Potentially. One at home, one on the road. So,
and they went to New England and played them tough last year in the postseason. Mm-hmm. That's one of the reasons I thought they had a shot to get to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, and Seattle's not scared to play anywhere. The only thing is if the injuries mount, they just need to play less games, win the division round at home, and then they go to Dallas for the NFC title game, which would be fascinating.
Right. Seattle needs to be careful. They're 8-3-1. They play at Green Bay this week. Detroit's at 8-4. Mm-hmm. So you got a half-game lead on that spot, and Detroit's got that horseshoe crammed pretty far up their backside right now.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't count on them losing too many down the stretch here. If you're the Seahawks, this is one you kind of need to get against the Packers. And the Green Bay absolutely has to have this game, you would think, this weekend to have any realistic shot. From the teams that are on the outside looking in, here are the teams in right now. Oakland, New England, Baltimore, and Houston lead the divisions in the AFC. Then Kansas City and Denver are wild cards. For me, it would be Pittsburgh, because I think Pittsburgh will beat Baltimore in the rematch, although Baltimore pretty much dominated them first time. I think if Pittsburgh wins the rematch with them in a couple of weeks, they'll end up winning the division and getting that way.
They got Cleveland one more time.
Right.
That helps.
Anybody, Miami, Pittsburgh, or do you think one of these teams that's Indy or Tennessee more likely to come up and steal the division?
I will go Pittsburgh. Miami, who do they have this week? They have
Miami's got
they're at home.
It's went right out of my head. They've got Arizona.
Arizona, okay. This was a big one for them. You know, they have New England coming in on the last game of the season.
Yeah, they're at the Jets in Buffalo and then New England at home.
Yeah, so like, you know.
That's manageable.
That Patriots game is interesting because if the Patriots have home field wrapped up.
Right.
With a loss tonight would help that for them by Oakland.
Yes.
That would put New England too clear with four to play. So that could help Miami a little bit. But I would agree with you that Pittsburgh, if they stay out of their own way, they're probably the best bet of those teams to make it.
In the NFC, you've got Dallas, Seattle, Detroit, and Atlanta lead their divisions. You've got the Giants and Tampa, mm-hmm. who currently occupy the wild card spots. Washington, Minnesota, Green Bay, all at 6-5-1 or 6-6. Any of those jump out at you? Think we got the right teams in there?
I think Green Bay may have gotten some things figured out defensively the last 2 weeks, and they're running it better. If they can win Sunday, I like them. You know, Tampa, they have New Orleans at home this week, and then they go at Dallas on a Sunday night. Is reality going to set in on the Bucks? So it's if I had to pick one that's not in it to make it, it would be Green Bay.
The schedule favors the Falcons. They play the Rams this week, albeit on the road. Then San Fran at home, then at Carolina. Mm-hmm. So those are three very winnable games before they close out with the New Orleans Saints. The Bucs get the Saints twice in the next 3 weeks as well. I tell you, I've been impressed with what the Bucs have been able to do, particularly a few weeks ago going into KC and getting a win.
Hey, Mike Smith's defense has turned it around. They didn't play great at some points early in the season. That Thursday night game against Atlanta. They had some short fields, but they also gave up some big plays. Is Mike Smith an option here?
Under certain scenarios, I think he would be, although you got to wonder. I don't think it's a hard and fast rule, but you got to think the odds are better that they go offense. Usually that's the pendulum swing, defensive coach to an offensive coach.
And I think the hard and fast rule right now is if you have no head coaching experience, you're not going to be considered.
What do you have coming up? You've got plenty of writing experience. How will you put it to use?
Nice segue. We have maybe some Allen Robinson stuff tomorrow if he's available today. We have something on Neil Sterling who, has emerged after his foot injury. And then on Saturday, Philip Heilman's going to have a nice story. Aurelius Ben, this is a story. This is a team that doesn't have any feel-good stories right now, a lot of them. I think Ben is one of them, and arguably he made the biggest play of the season to win the Chicago game. Sunday's paper, Gene on Jimmy Smith. Hayes will write about, hey, this has got to be the week to create some turnovers against a bad Minnesota offense. And when I write the Insider, I'm going to make the case for, regardless of who the head coach is, Todd Wash should be next year's defensive coordinator.
Yeah, you know what? I think that's possible, too, depending on the guy who comes in and if he's got a staff in place. You know, if he's an offensive guy and you feel like the defense is headed in the right direction, that's an interesting one, Ryan. We'll talk about that more next week. Good job by you today.
Good job by you, Mike.
Appreciate Tim Yotter from Viking Update coming by with his high degree of enthusiasm. Good luck to Bowles with Fat Tony on the call or partially on the call tonight along with Cole Pepper as the Bowles Bulldogs try to knock off Coco for a state title. For Tyler Devitt, for Joe Fortunato, we've got the midday chalk right around the corner. What else was I going to mention there? Oh, yes, tomorrow. Don't forget. Tyler, what time for Jimmy Smith tomorrow? 11 o'clock?
11 a.m. sharp, yeah.
11 a.m. And David Garrard has confirmed he will be in for tomorrow's show. So DG9, Tony will be back. We'll talk with Jimmy on the eve of him going into the Pride.
Yeah, it should be a good event Sunday.
Yeah, look forward to it. All right, Ryan, great stuff, man. Thank you for the time today.
Great, thank
there
you.
There he goes, Ryan O'Halloran of the Florida Times Union, at Ryan O'Halloran on Twitter. For Tyler Devitt and Joe Fortunato,
I'm
Mike Dempsey.
Ryan.
Yes,
Ryan,
what?
Will you be meeting Ric Flair this weekend?
Oh, yeah, Ric Flair. Are you going to be at the meet and greet with Ric Flair?
I will not.
Did you hear Jimmy Hart yesterday, by the way?
I did. Thank you, Tyler, for tweeting that. His answer, because then I went back last night and listened to it online.
Excellent. Good. He gave kind of like his personal Mount Rushmore and then said the all-time is too difficult.
Well, the first guy I'd never heard of.
Me either.
As judged by, he's not on Twitter, but I was glad to see Lawler, Hulkster, and Vince on there.
There you go. Ryan O'Halloran, wrestling fan extraordinaire. That does it for Jaguars today. The Midday Chalk is next on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
You guys have a good day. Peace.
It's a Farrah and Farrah Thursday on Jaguars Today from the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field.
Hey, everybody. Mike Dempsey here for Dandy Sandwiches and Sub. My friends at Dandy, the Thompson family, have been doing it right now for over 60 years, and they've been doing it as a local original company. And you know what? They employ people here on the First Coast, and they put out a great product, and they support all the local sports teams. And you should support them as well because they keep getting it done. You know, you don't support them just because they're local. You support them because they do the job right. They put out a quality product at a price you can afford, that it's always going to be fresh. It's always going to be delicious. It's always going to have great variety. Sandwiches and subs on the go. You got the breakfast sliders. You got the lunchtime wraps. They're adding variety constantly. And again, I tell you, the toughest part of making a decision about Dandy is which of the many options you have that you're going to go with on that particular day. Hey, maybe you're heading to the stadium this weekend to do a little tailgating. Load up the cooler with Dandy sandwiches and subs. There's going to be something in there for everybody to love. Whenever you're hungry for food on the go, folks, do what I do. Go out and make yours a Dandy and do it today.
Everything you need to know about your Jacksonville Jaguars. This is Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.